Good morning, everyone. I enjoyed the singing and the testimonies and the thankfulness. That is something that I want to grow in my life. For the sermon this morning, I'm going to go to something a little bit different. We're planning for a year of sermons on intentional Christian godly living. And so this is one aspect that's very practical about that. Part of that is intentional use of technology, using technology the way we should. It's something that we all relate to, I think, and it's actually going to be a series of three sermons, so over the next several weeks, 2 weeks from now, we'll have the second sermon, The Dangers of Technology. This morning we'll be looking at kind of the history, how Christians and other people have related to technology throughout history. And then probably sometime in January, we'll have part three, which is kind of just the practical outworking of how Christians should be using technology. So if you can get a chance to hear all three of those, you'll probably get a better picture of it. We all have biases, so I want to be transparent about my biases when it comes to this subject. Growing up, our family was more early adopters of technology, and we enjoyed it, used it a lot. So some of that was good, some of it wasn't. And then we had a lot of people around us who were kind of the other extreme, who tended to be fearful of it and worried about it, and I have probably in my life tended to react to that and adopt technology without enough of forethought, without enough of intentionality. So I think God is working to teach me not to be like that, but to be intentional, to use technology as a tool and not for something that uses me, to kind of take a look at its benefits, its downsides. And if you think that the sermon this morning is too biased in favor of technology, why, don't judge it until you've heard the next one. I want to look at the dangers in 2 weeks, so try to understand that I'm going to be looking at both sides, but not all this morning. So for a simple definition of technology, technology is an attempt to reduce the effects of the fall. And that is, of course, oversimplified and a broad generalization. It's not true in every situation. But human race went through the fall, and many things about technology are an attempt to change that and to make up for the negatives of the fall. And that doesn't make it a bad thing. We're not trying to fight God. I think instead it is designing, making, inventing is part of the way God asked us to rule the world, and not rule the world in a bad way. He said, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, and rule over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. And very, very soon after the fall, we see mankind working to build technology, to design things. Genesis 4:17-22. Cain had relations with his wife, and she conceived and gave birth to Enoch, and he built a city and called the name of the city Enoch after the name of his son. So we don't know what that city looked like or what technology he developed to build that, but very likely maybe he learned stonemasonry to build houses, to build walls. You can let your imagination run what that city might have looked like, but clearly he learned something, he developed something, he invented something. Moving on a little further, Genesis 4:20-22. Adah gave birth to Jabal. He was the father of those who dwell in tents and have livestock, so he was a farmer. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all those who play the lyre and pipe. So Jubal probably understood some things about music in order to make instruments. Maybe music, maybe harmony, we don't know again, but clearly he was designing, he was using that God-given desire to create. As for Zillah, she also gave birth to Tubal-Cain, the forger of all implements of bronze and iron. So he's making metal, probably refining metal, maybe mining the ore out of the ground. But he's building, he's growing, he's creating, he's making things. And not all these things, through this time, there were a lot of wicked people. Clearly, God brought about the flood to judge these people. Thank you, Titus. Appreciate it. So not necessarily were all these things used for good things, but the design themselves was part of God's mandate. And then we have, of course, Noah. He built a giant piece of technology, and we don't know how all he built that, but it was quite an impressive feat, 510 feet long and 50 feet tall. roughly, we would guess, according to what the Bible says. And he built this ark, and the time and energy and tools and equipment and technology he must have used to build that, I imagine, was quite incredible. And then we see the flip side. There's a time, 1 Samuel 13:19-23, where Israel was living in sin, and look at the results of that. Now, no blacksmith could be found in all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, otherwise the Hebrews will make swords or spears. So all Israel went down to the Philistines, each to sharpen his plowshare, his mattock, his axe, and his hoe. The charge was 2/3 of a shekel for the plowshares, the mattocks, the forks, the axes, and to fix the hoes. So it came about on the day of battle that neither sword nor spear was found in the hands of any of the people who were with Saul and Jonathan, but they were found with Saul and his son Jonathan. So Israel is living in sin, and we start to see a pattern emerge. Godliness tends to go with clear, advanced thinking and the development of technology. Ungodliness darkens the mind and tends to go with devolving technology. This is not always 100% true, but you'll generally see that, and we'll notice that as we go through this. Next, we move on to Solomon's temple and the amazing wealth that it took, but the amazing engineering that it took. The house, while it was being built, was built of stone prepared at the quarry, and there was neither hammer nor axe nor any iron tool heard in the house while it was being built. Now, I don't know how many of you have built things, but I can't imagine building a thing with no saws and hammers and chisels, and it's completely prefabricated. I don't know, Art, have you ever built anything like that? Can you imagine building something like that? The precise measurement tools, the cutting tools, the design, the engineering that went into doing something like that is quite amazing in my mind. Staying with the theme of Solomon's temple, so out front of the temple, he had the golden the laver, and he just built it way bigger. And if, notice, look at this as we read. Now he made the sea of cast metal, 10 cubits from brim to brim, circular in form, and its height was 5 cubits, and 30 cubits in circumference. So, just to cast this giant piece of bronze, most likely, it doesn't say it's bronze right here, but to me it's just incredible. But then on top of that, think about this. At that stage, they had calculated the approximate value of pi, the ratio of the diameter to the circumference. They knew that if it was 10 cubits across, it's 30 cubits around. So they had calculated that that value was approximately 3, which is it's very close to. Going further down through Israel's history, moreover, Uzziah prepared for all the army shields, spears, helmets, body armor, bows, and sling stones. In Jerusalem, he made engines of war invented by skillful men to be on the towers and on the corners for the purpose of shooting arrows and great stones. Hence, his fame spread afar, for he was marvelously helped until he was strong. So he was a mostly godly king, and he's associated with invention of defense technology for the city of Jerusalem. And I don't know what machines these were that his men invented, but it was for shooting arrows, so maybe some kind of mechanical crossbows, something like that. And for shooting great stones, maybe one of those giant trebuchets. There's no recorded history that those were invented that early, but clearly it was something that could shoot great stones. So definitely, as he was a king who was following God, he's designing, he's inventing these things, him and his men. Moving later, we have the Roman roads, just an incredible system, which, if you look at our roads today, use many of these same concepts. They're high in the center. They drain the water to the edge. They have several layers of foundation. They're designed for efficiency, and they built them for administration, for defense of the empire, for conquest, and it's for military use, but if you look at this system of roads and you think about the early church, this same system of roads designed by the military, for the military, God used to spread the gospel. And early Christians traveled these roads, sent letters by these roads, and used what was designed for, they used it for good. 53,000 miles of paved roads were in the Roman Empire. And that is just quite incredible to me. And then we have the Dark Ages, and the church and the state joined, and spiritual darkness followed, and it just rained over the whole earth. And with very few exceptions, the Western world was covered with spiritual darkness, with poverty, with war. Technology was lost. Concrete had been invented in the Roman Empire. People forgot how to make it. And for 1,000 years, it was dark spiritually. People's minds were dark. There were hardly any new inventions. It was just a time of great darkness. And I'd like to look at some Bible verses that talk about the association of evil with darkness of the mind. Ephesians 4:17. So this I say and affirm together with the Lord, that you walk no longer just as the Gentiles walk, in the futility of their mind, being darkened in their understanding. So he's associating this with evil, and their mind becomes darkness, their understanding becomes darkened, and they lose not only spiritual understanding, but just understanding of how the world works. Excluded from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them, because of the hardness of their heart, and they, having become callous, having given themselves over to sensuality for the practice of every kind of impurity with greediness. So most of it's talking about evil, but this evil is associated with darkness and the inability to think clearly. Romans, Paul talks about this as well. And just as they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer, God gave them over to a depraved mind. So this is again happening in their mind, to do those things which are not proper, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, greed, evil, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malice. They are gossips, slanderers, haters of God, insolent, arrogant, boasters, inventors of evil. They're using their minds to invent evil, disobedient to parents, and without understanding. They don't understand how the world works. They don't understand the laws that are able to create inventions. Untrustworthy, unloving, unmerciful, and although they know the ordinance of God, that those who practice such things are worthy of death, they not only do the same, but also give hearty approval to those who practice them. Technology tends to rise and fall with godliness, or even the acceptance of godly principles. Someone can be an atheist but accept godly principles and derive some level of benefit, even though it doesn't save their soul, acknowledging God. So we're coming out of the Dark Ages, and this man, Johannes Gutenberg, invents, who of the children can tell me what this man invented? Yes. The printing press, the first practical printing press in the West. The Chinese had something kind of impractical before this, but as far as the West and our ancestors are concerned, the first practical printing press. And who knows what he printed first? First book off the press. The Bible. Now, what language was it in? No, it was in Latin. So he was still from the school of the Catholic Church, where things happened in Latin, and not everyone could read it, or very few people could read it. But he printed the Bible, and this gave the burgeoning Renaissance an efficient way to distribute information. And the same with the Reformation. It put information out. It put the Bible out in languages that people could read it soon. That soon happened. People could afford it. Not only could they not read it, they couldn't afford to own one. They were so expensive because they had to hand copy the whole thing. And another thing that was very early distributed based on the printing press was Martin Luther's 95 Theses. And these ideas were beginning to change. People were starting to realize that the Catholic Church didn't hold a monopoly on truth. And as with all new technology, some things are good and some are bad. It created a new category of addict, the news junkie. There were these cheap newspapers that would go around, and people would just eat it up because we as humans do these things. Now, many people sang the praises of the printing press. They said that poor people could learn virtues and knowledge could be democratized, but not everyone agreed. Filippo di Strada, a monk from Venice, he vehemently disagreed. He criticized printers as people that were just out to make a quick buck. They didn't worry about, they didn't want to work hard, that they weren't, or they just wanted to make money. They didn't care if what they printed was accurate, which there was a lot of truth in that. A lot of really, literally false information or bad information was out there. They said that this new kind of gold rush to the printing industry created just a lot of unworthwhile and inaccurate books, which it did. And he was worried that people would try to interpret the Bible themselves instead of listening to the priests, which maybe that was a good thing. It was a good thing. He even called on the Doge Marcello of Venice to ban printing altogether. At that time, Venice was the printing capital of the world, had more printers than any other city, and he said, let's just ban it altogether. But, you know, he was only one in a long, long line of people to decry new technology. And we'll kind of notice some of that as we go through history. Galileo Galilei, he's an interesting character. Sort of in the beginning of this new Renaissance, he went to Catholic Church, and he was 20 years old, and perhaps the sermon was in Latin, I don't know, perhaps he was bored, perhaps he wasn't paying attention, but he's noticing swinging overhead are these lamps, and the breeze was coming in and blowing these lamps. One was swinging just a little bit, and one was swinging more. And very creatively, since they didn't have watches, he used his heartbeat to time them as a stopwatch to see how long it took for each one to swing. And he noticed that the one that was swinging further and the one that was swinging less both took the same amount of time to swing. And he discovered a very important phenomenon called the isochronism of a pendulum, which is the foundation of clocks, how early clocks with pendulums worked. And he worked on all kinds of things, the understanding of magnetism. He invented a refracting telescope. He invented the forerunner of the thermometer. He proved that objects of different weights fall at the same speed, although probably not by dropping them from the Leaning Tower of Pisa, as the common myth goes. But his probably most controversial idea that he discovered while looking through his telescope was that the Earth orbits the sun. And not very many people agreed with him, and the Catholic Church believed, based on what they thought the Bible said, that the sun orbits the earth. And you can kind of take that depending how you look at some scriptures. But it turns out that the Catholic Church is not a big fan of people criticizing their ideas and disagreeing with them. So they hauled him into court, tried him for heresy, convicted him, and put him under house arrest for the rest of his life. Although he did continue his writing career. Another part of of this growth in knowledge, Isaac Newton. Just amazing all the stuff that he learned, the refraction of light, mathematics. He discovered calculus, the law of universal gravitation. He formulated the three laws of motion, studied tides, and many, many, many more things. But I think as we look at the Reformation and the Renaissance, this idea, this awakening of ideas, was in lockstep together. Understanding and knowledge grew as openness to God and to what he had to say went together. And as I find this quote from C.S. Lewis very, very interesting. Men became scientific because they expected law in nature, and they expected law in nature because they believed in a legislator or a God who made these laws. In most modern scientists, this belief has died. And I firmly believe that as that belief dies, science will die with it. You cannot believe and no legislator, no being who creates these laws and really, truly study science. The concept for the last 75 years or so in academia has been that Christianity and science can't go together. Christians have this blind faith, and so therefore they can't really look at the world as it really is, and they can't really do science. I really believe it's just the opposite, that the foundation of a belief in God and laws that don't change and realities is the foundation of science truly working. Science can happen outside of Christianity, it does, but in many cases where Christianity flourishes, where science flourishes, Christianity has flourished first. Paul says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Your mind has a lot to do with this. So, we talked about some people that oppose technology, and we're going to talk about some more of them. Who can tell me some reasons why we oppose technology? We personally or we collectively? Why do we oppose technology? These can be good reasons, bad reasons, or in between reasons. We can't see the outcome. And that's a legitimate reason to be critical or think critically or carefully. Why else? I'm sorry? We're worried about it becoming addicted?
At least we use, let's say, our own physical body or let's say our own mind. We start using cell phones to tell us things and use cars to take us places. And then people say, for example, that new thing of AI coming up. It's like, okay, are we gonna think, or is this even gonna think for us? So you start losing yourself a little bit more and more.
You start to create a dependence on it.
Yeah.
And what happens if we ever lose it?
Yeah, it's like a fear of what's gonna happen.
Mm-hmm. Ron?
Here's the examples of bad uses of technology. For instance, in the early days of the internet, you hear about people who were using the internet for bad purposes, and therefore it kind of tinted your view of what the internet could be used for.
Seeing the abuses or the misuse, for sure.
I think because of man, technology in every case when it comes out has been turned to evil. I mean, the guy that invented, you know, the nuclear fission process, you know, immediately that was turned to a bomb. And you know, there's been multiple cases throughout history where technology was invented by someone and immediately was turned to something that's evil. Mm-hmm. And so I think that makes us cautious.
Mm-hmm. Someone over here?
I was just going to say, that's the power and the reach of evil. I mean, it's not that anything can be abused. Mm-hmm. You know, abuse the use of our cars and telephones and anything.
Yeah. It extends the power and reach of evil. I would definitely agree. I kind of summarized it with five different ideas. Fear, we're afraid of what it could do. A lack of understanding. When we don't understand something, we tend to fear it too. And we cannot fully understand modern technology, but the less we understand it, the more fearful we tend to be of it. Concern for the future. What is it going to be? Where is it going to go? Age has a big part. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more. How old we are has a big impact on how much we accept technology. And then unintended consequences, and some of these relate to each other. As far as relationships, we're going to talk about one in particular, losing jobs. You know, what is it going to do to the job market? It could be used to control people. What health risks does it bring? There are a lot of reasons that we might reject it. And I'm going to look at a few quotes throughout history of what people had to say about technology. This quote is from a fictional story by Plato, so way, way back. And so it's not a true story, but it gives you an idea of how early people were concerned about technology. And he's talking about the invention of writing. This invention will produce forgetfulness in the minds of those who learn to use it, because they will not practice their memory. So when the written word was invented, somebody was worried about it. This is a fictional story, but you get the idea. Martin Van Buren, he was the governor of New York, and while he was the governor of New York, he wrote a letter to the President Jackson and said, "These new trains are horrible. We should not have them. There will be many jobs lost." He said, "Railroad carriages are pulled at the enormous speed of 15 miles per hour. The Almighty certainly never intended that people should travel at such a breakneck speed." And we laugh at this, but we do the same thing. We all do the same thing. And then, of course, moving on to cars, lots of people were critical of cars. There were many advertisements, you know, get rid of your horse, buy a car. But just as people opposed the printing press, the railroads, they opposed cars. And, you know, of course, this is a cartoon about people opposing the invention of a wheel. But it gets the idea, no matter where technology is, that people are going to oppose it. And with cars, it was the dangerous drivers and accidents and dust and smoke. And there was attempts to ban cars. And in some cases, they were banned in certain areas. And then I'm just going to run through a number of quotes. "The ordinary horseless carriage at present is a luxury for the wealthy. And although its price will probably fall in the future, it will never, of course, come into as common use as the bicycle." And then here we talked a little bit about age. And something, a technology that's in the world when we're born, we just accept that it's part of the world. As we get into our youth, we're excited. It's something that's invented in our youth. We get excited about it usually. We tend to accept it. Maybe we get a job working in that field. And then after we get to middle age, anything that's new is just becomes something that's out of the natural order of things and we shouldn't accept. That's, again, a broad generalization. But there is a lot of truth in that. So we should, as younger people, we should be careful not to just accept everything. And as we get older, we should be careful not to just reject everything. Another quote, the Americans have need of the telephone, but we do not. We have plenty of messenger boys, the man from the British Postal Service. And Thomas Edison, this is about him. Everyone acquainted with the subject will recognize Thomas Edison's experiments as a conspicuous failure trumpeted as a wonderful success. And we all benefit from some of Thomas Edison's inventions. And now here's what Thomas Edison said. He couldn't see ahead of his time. Fooling around with alternating current is just a waste of time. Nobody will use it ever. Oh, we see he was dead wrong, too. By 2005 or so, it will become clear that the Internet's impact on the economy has been no greater than the fax machines. Everybody's always asking me when Apple will come out with a cell phone. My answer is probably never. We look back at these things and we laugh because it's ridiculous. But let's just apply it to us and remember to learn the lessons. So why do we accept technology? What are your thoughts on that? We said convenience. It's easy. It makes my life easier. At least I think it will. Can absolutely be used for good. There is a better mousetrap, and if there's a better mousetrap, I'm going to use it. Franz. It does seem that if we were all, hoeing in our backyard, raising all our own food, we probably would have a difficult time feeding the world population. Another thing is understanding. I think at least a basic understanding of technology helps us to be more open and accepting. Lack of foresight. We can't see the unintended consequences, so we accept it. And a lack of intentionality, and I know I've been guilty of this. It's the shiny new thing, and I want it, so I'm going to buy it. And we don't think. But looking at the positive, Proverbs 15:14, the mind of the intelligent seeks knowledge, but the mouth of fools feeds on folly. And so let's be that intelligent mind. Let's be godly. Let's not be full of folly. And here's something that Charles Lindbergh said that I thought was very apt. I now see scientific accomplishments as a path, not an end, a path leading to and disappearing in mystery. So we can't see where it's going. It's out in the future. But rather than nullifying religion and proving that God is dead, science enhances spiritual values by revealing the magnitudes and the minitudes from the cosmos to the atom. I think if we can look at it that way, as science is a way to see more of what God has made, to understand God more, that is the way we should look at it. We should look at it that technology is not good or evil in itself, but it comes from acknowledging God. And it's optimized by a Judeo-Christian worldview. And fear of technology is not the way, just a fear that we are afraid of it all. And also a blind acceptance of technology is also not the way to do it, but we should be intentional, and we should be evaluating the benefits and the drawbacks, and let's do that in light of biblical principles and with prayer and Holy Spirit's guidance. So God bless you as you do that.